You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. The coronavirus pandemic has forced many of us to reflect on the support systems in our lives. It definitely has for me. I became a new mom just a few weeks before COVID-19 tore through New York City in the early spring. And because of orders to shelter in place, my support system fell apart and I became my son's sole caretaker. The pandemic made me realize just how fragile our social networks can be. But as it continues through the fall and winter, I'm also realizing how critical those systems are to our overall survival. And I'm not the only one who's been reflecting on the help we're giving and receiving during this time.
Hi, this is Christy from Oklahoma City. I haven't been doing very well. I'm struggling to get things done outside of work. I have bipolar disorder, and it's been tough dealing with the depression from the pandemic, my own depression, and seasonal depression. I'm trying my best to reach out to others and stay connected. No one should feel alone during this time. My mental capacity has definitely felt depleted, trying to focus and be productive with everything that's going on. I'm definitely ready for this to lessen and for things to improve soon.
This is Dee Dee Tassone from San Francisco. The most satisfying thing I've done in the last 8 months was just last weekend. My daughter's grandchildren and I formed a team to volunteer for the San Francisco Food Bank. We must have filled over 100 boxes and grocery bags with food for those less fortunate. When we finished our shift, I was exhausted but highly gratified since I had been feeling so helpless.
For more on our support networks and coping in the pandemic, I'm joined by author Nicole Chung. Nicole recently wrote about the importance of emotional support systems for the New York Times. Nicole, thanks for being with me.
Hi, Tanzina. I'm really glad to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. You shared a very personal story in your New York Times piece about how you were coping after your mother passed away during the pandemic, which I will offer my condolences to that. How have you been coping since? How has that evolved?
Oh, gosh. I mean, in the early weeks, I think I was moving through stages that'll be familiar to anybody who's grieved. So, there was definitely a lot of anger and there was some denial. And I think one of the things that made it really difficult to just accept what was happening was the fact that we were in a pandemic, and I felt really cut off, not just from my mother and from her caregivers across the country, but also from just my support system, you know, which is also spread out across the country. But I couldn't even see people who lived close by. And it was just a really tough time to figure out how to cope and how to really stay functional in the midst of all this grief when I was feeling so isolated from everyone.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because our circumstances are different, but in many ways I really, what resonated to me in your piece was how you said at some point you just didn't know how to accept the help, right? That people were trying to reach out to you and it was just all too much. And I think for those of us who tend to be very self-sufficient, it is hard to accept help. How was that for you? Navigating how that felt when people are trying to reach you and you're like, I don't want to do this right now.
Yeah, I mean, I was always really thankful for people who were reaching out. And at the same time, it's so hard when you can't be with people. And when you know that everyone reaching out to you is also struggling, they're also overwhelmed. Many of them also grieving something or someone. I think it's wonderful that people are trying to reach out and be supportive across these connections. I have noticed a lot of the time, really all I can do and all others can do is sort of hold that space together. Really back to basics of empathy, mirroring what the other person says and listening and talking about what they're telling you and how they feel, just making room for all of their emotions and giving language to it. We can't actually physically reach each other. And constructive advice and practical help, these are really important things too, but sometimes it can just be most helpful to let people know you hear and you're there with them, and not feel so much anxiety about whether you can concretely make things better for them.
And this idea that everybody that comes up in your piece also is sort of that people are trying to help in the ways that they can, right? And I feel like that's going both ways. Talk a little bit more about that. How are people trying to help others and also help themselves and sort of find where their limits are and what they're capable of?
Well, this is where I was really grateful to get to talk with some helping professionals. And one of them, Martha Crawford, who's a psychotherapist, I think the phrase she used that I loved was that this sort of help is in the spirit of mutual aid, right? And that also comes from understanding where some of our support systems were weak already, or places where our infrastructure or our safety nets are being dismantled or are just overwhelmed. Like, this spirit of emotional mutual aid, that we are really who we have, can be an empowering thing to remember and to move forward with together. And so you move out of that competitive space for limited resources and feeling like, you know, I don't have that much to give, or I can't ask this other person who also might not have much to give. And then just say honestly where you're at, like, do you have the capacity to be there? And let people know that you want to be there and that you're thinking of them, and give what you have to give.
Some people done things like they've come to do socially distant laundry, which I can't tell you is one of the best things that's ever happened in my life. And yet those are things that require someone to be physically present. But when they can't be physically present, Nicole, how should people think about reaching out? How should people think about offering help? We heard from one of our callers who said, you know, she went to pack food for folks who are hungry. So what other ways can people do that when they can't be physically present?
I think, you know, one thing is just, again, being very intentional about reaching out and about, you know, it can sound sort of like administrative, but it's helped me a lot to actually make appointments with people, like to set times, because it's easy to say like, oh, we'll catch up later or we'll talk again. But I have found unless I set a time, it's too easy for that to sort of fall by the wayside when everybody is so busy and overwhelmed. You know, I think some of it too, if you're fortunate enough to have resources to share, you know, I've given and received a lot of material help over the past 7 months, and I've been really, really thankful for that. Sometimes, you know, it's hard knowing a friend is grieving far away, and I can't actually be with them. But, you know, I there are people like within my reach who are going through similar things. And, you know, sometimes if you can't be there for everyone you want to be, again, it's about finding, like, identifying who is within your circle, within your reach, maybe within your community, and how you can safely be there for them, even if you can't be there for every single person. You know, I think so many people are operating in these pods, like sort of community pods or even long distance pods. And you sort of have to be able to tell, like, your group, your people, like, when you need help. And recognize too, like, a big thing for me was, like, you don't have to get all the way to falling apart to ask for help. You know, you can kind of just have these check-ins and report how you're doing. If there are people you give freely to, there are people that, you know, you can also ask for help when you need.
I love this. And we're going to keep listening and asking our listeners to call up with how they're coping and asking and getting help as well. Nicole Chung is the author of the memoir, All You Can Ever Know. Nicole, thank you so much for sharing your experience.
Thank you, Tanzina.
We're going to keep coming back to this question as the pandemic roars on, but here's what we've heard so far from you.
This is Lisa from Little Rock, Arkansas. I'm very fortunate to be working. I clean houses Monday through Friday and have a part-time job on Saturday and Sunday. Two adult children, one with a baby, who are struggling. They can't pay their utilities, their car tax, and my anxiety is through the roof. Is the current government really going to kick my children to the street? They are doing everything they are supposed to be doing. We're in the South, and speaking for myself, I'm not sure I could contain myself if my children become homeless. I pray every day for all of us on this tiny planet in hopes that we can come back from this, but I'm not sure that we can.
Hi, my name is Joe Rogoff, and I'm from Burnville, California. My grandson visited a few days ago. We stayed outside, suitably separated, but didn't wear masks. He called us yesterday to tell us that one of his roommates tested positive for COVID. He was tested this morning and was told it would be 2 to 6 days for results. So, how am I coping? I imagine every cough, sniffle, unbalanced feeling to be a sign that I'm infected. The interminable duration of this virus is usually unnoticed but present weight that we're carrying. That stress seems to be showing up as an accelerator to the many tensions that already exist. It's the straw that's threatening to break my back.
Hi, this is Hannah from Levittown, and I've been working from home in a new job. I know everyone's experiences are different, but I've actually been okay because unemployment equaled near working two of my jobs, which I was working before the pandemic hit. I'm okay with paying my rent, but next month I might have to start looking at participating in one of the local food banks, and that's a little scary to me because I've never had to do that before.
And others find some aspects of life easier to cope with now than before the pandemic.
This is Suzanne from Raleigh, North Carolina. Nothing has changed in my life for the worst because of the pandemic. In fact, if anything, it's gotten better. I am now working remotely, so I don't have to commute 8 hours a week. I've had more chance to bond with my family, my husband. I've had more time to take care of myself. I've lost 20 pounds during the pandemic so far. And, you know, I've achieved a sense of mental clarity that wasn't there when I was, you know, running around every place. I kind of am enjoying my life.
But from balancing work and homeschooling to the mental health challenges of social isolation, many people's lives have become more stressful. And for those in the service industry and the many millions who have lost their jobs during this pandemic, it's been a particularly difficult time to cope.
Hi, my name is Bella. I'm from Tacoma, Washington. I own a hair salon here. And coping with the pandemic has been tricky for all hairdressers because we have a state mandate that tells us we can only operate at 50% capacity. However, if we're operating, we then are not qualified to get unemployment or other assistance because if you make more money than the ridiculously low amount that they cap it at, you can't get assistance. You can't make your normal amount of money, and you can't operate at the level that you're supposed to unless you want to risk making people sick, getting yourself sick, or losing your license. And yet they won't do anything to subsidize that in order for us to be able to follow the mandate. And it's maddening.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.